are now firmly into a Thursday afternoon once again here on 90.7 FM, KALX Berkeley. Well, a couple minutes into a Thursday afternoon at any rate. It is time, as announced, for the program Arts Interview, here for a half hour talking about things artistic. My name is Gregory Sharpen.
I'm Lisa Monhoff.
And I am Stephanie Kalem. And we are here today with Bay Area writer Mark Montgomery French, who is going to be talking about something that he's doing at the Museum of the African Diaspora next week, which is called... Sorry.
There's your pronunciation. Is it diaspora or diaspora?
Or diaspora.
I knew what diaspora. Lovely woman. No, I believe the people there call it diaspora.
Oh, okay. Diaspora.
Diaspora Jennings. Yes, I remember her.
Oh, yeah. She's on next week talking about modern dance. Anyway, Mark is here to talk about, I want you to define it, but it is called All Your Favorite Music is Probably Black.
And I like how the probably went up a pitch.
Yeah,
it's wonderful.
Because it's a parenthetical.
It is, right? I don't want to be presumptuous.
musical notation.
There might be one song or two that isn't.
Yes.
Know, maybe.
Yeah. Tuvan throat music. It's okay.
Probably.
So we're off to a rollicking start. Mark, how would you describe it? Is it, what would you call this event?
I would call it a musical presentation. There'll be music, there'll be visual, there'll be laughter. So it's more like a slimmed down, more laugh-filled TED Talk, I would say, about music. And really, it's about pop music from the last 50s toward now, and how there have been black people involved in all the major genres. But at this point, a lot of them aren't around anymore or have been asked to leave or are not very populated at the events concerning these genres. Ergo, black people in country music. There have always been black people in country music. Not that many right now, although more than ever at this point. The young man who had Jimmy Allen, his first single went to number one on the country chart. For a black dude, that's never, ever happened. And that was last November. Huh. So this is really current news. But black people were around the beginning of country music and helped form the sound.
Yeah, I love the tidbit in your fact in your presentation about Leslie Eslie Riddle, who taught the Carter family their chords for a decade.
Right. So for those of you who don't know, the Carter family were the first family of country music. When Johnny Cash married one of the Carter daughters, it was a big deal because he was the new upstart marrying into the royalty. And they would go around the country to rural areas and learn the songs and perform them as part of the repertoire. But they had Leslie Riddle actually learn all of the guitar parts and teach them how to play it for live performances and for recordings. They also made sure he did not get any royalties or any copyrights. And pretty much it's been written out of their history. So, and he was doing this for over 10 years. So he definitely was there and helped make them big. But at this point, a black person involved in country, you still get the side eye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I feel like anytime you say Darius Rucker, there's a side eye.
His side eye started a long time ago.
I know. Permanent side eye.
Before the term side eye.
Yeah.
So how did you uncover Riddle? In what sort of research have you done for that?
I read a lot. I actually know other journalists who have actually sent me things, which is, Mark, I know you're doing this show. Read about this.
Oh, wow.
I watch a lot of music documentaries as well. I did a piece. Every year I kind of write a piece about black music documentaries for Black History Month. And there's also tidbits just shoved in the side of some of the things they uncover as well. So there hardly is any one source of any of this, just kind of like...
Watch a bunch of Les Blank films or watch...
There we go.
That's a testament to researchers and the collaboration. When you put something out there and people want to know about it more, they want to help you to summarize it.
It's been fantastic, actually.
Can you mention the website that you just said that you did the Black History Month?
Yes. If you go to modsf.org, which is MOAD's... org, not only can you find the calendar of my event, but they've also reposted my latest list of 28 films. So you can actually go there and check out all the ones, one per day for February, the 28th.
That's a lot of time to spend on. Yeah, I read through the list, and unfortunately didn't have all the time to watch all of them.
What?
But it looked like an amazing.
You didn't give up hundreds of hours in the last week to watching things off my list? I'm leaving.
I will be working on it the next few weeks.
I was just going to say, don't start perusing that list at work, because you might find yourself accidentally starting to watch a full-length movie. Not that I did.
Oh, look, it's lunchtime now. Now that I'm done with the movie, I can go to lunch.
I could justify some of it.
So how did the talk itself come about? Was it your idea? Was it their idea?
It was a combination of three ideas. One, I'm also a creative director, so I've been giving presentations to clients for decades, basically. It's
like, creative director at MOAD.
No, actually, I've worked in the ed world for years, actually. So when I'm not doing this, worked for agencies, ed agencies on big clients like you've heard of, like AT&T and Microsoft, and showing them things that they should be doing. Here's some art. Here's the next thing that we want to show you. So it's been one side of that. I've also been a musician for 30-plus years and played in town. And trying to combine two sides into one activity seemed like a fun thing. So that was one of them. My wife also said, you should really do something like that. So she was a big give her props. Thank you, wife. And then I actually know Elizabeth Gessel, who is the program director at MOAD, and she's like, this sounds great. When do you want to do it? How about Black History
Month? How
about
February?
She gave that some thought and went, what a good idea.
Mm-hmm. There's something interesting just talking about, I mean, you mentioned the idea that, you know, I'm doing this talk and suddenly you get flooded with information of, you know, people saying, I've got this little piece of the puzzle. I've got this little piece of the puzzle. And it seems that we're living in an era now where all of the history of marginalized musicians, like women in electronic music or women musicians in general or Black musicians, are being brought back out of the cold, as it were. Mm-hmm. I mean, because there is such the availability of research and people putting things out, it seems like we are actually at a time where technology is helping us make sure these histories are not forgotten or sidelined.
Yeah, and I think part of it also, it's interesting. I think one of the reasons why, if you look at movies and television, the most interesting television is happening on cable shows. It's because they're not sitcoms, they're not following a beat. But also all of those stations had to. They had to pop out away from, we're not CBS, we're not making sitcoms, what can we do? So we get a Breaking Bad or we get a Mad Men. And I think the same thing's happening as well with some of these marginalized musicians, in which this story's never been told. Mm-hmm. We've heard the other story a bazillion times, mm-hmm. but we haven't heard this one. I'm not looking forward to the new Motley Crue biopic, The Dirt, but I don't think I'm going to learn anything new about, you know, degenerate hair metal band people. You know,
no, you're just going to get to see it.
Yeah, yes, it's more visceral. Well, that's a lot of Jack Daniels, guys. But you mentioned musicians, women in music. Big fan of Wendy Carlos, who did Switch John Bach, and you cannot legally buy a new copy of Switched on Bach. Mm. It's not available for streaming. It's not available for digital downloads. So the best place to probably get a copy of that would be at a legal rip, which I don't really want to do, or, you know, probably every Goodwill in America has a scratched-up copy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as wonderful as she is, for whatever reason, all of her music's off, not available. Mm-hmm. So it's like, so the fact that it's any ability to hear about things and share these things, because so many people, I think, are really interested in something that's different.
Well, and looking at the genres and the artists that you cover in your talk, from, you know, there's goth, there's country, there's K-pop, there's so many different kinds of erasure. Like, you know, it's like you can cut Black people out of the picture like 50 different ways, you know?
Yeah.
Like either without recognition.
Punk music
or saying, oh, well, that's not that kind of music. Like I just, my favorite, as you guys know, is the Screamin' Jay Hawkins as the goth father. I mean, spoiler alert, like YouTube is caught on. If you watch his live performance of I Put a Spell on You from, I think, Granada TV in 1960, uh-huh. The next thing it autoplays to is Bela Lugosi's Dead. but you know, there's no but like there's no acknowledgement because there was like
and it's a seamless transition.
Yeah, right? No, it's great.
That's self DJing. That's fantastic. Now, Screamin' Jay Hawkins was amazing, and even some of the things he brought with him on stage, the skulls and the snakes, these are all things that were very popular in Western African cultures. They're all, if you venerate your dead ancestors. You have their skulls with you at all times. You would pray to snakes because snakes would actually give you health and protect you. So he's bringing all this on the stage as part of his act, and then you cut later to pretty much Alice Cooper doing it with none of the background. It's kind of like, oh, snakes and skulls. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Not to diss Alice Cooper, but...
Well, wow. Screamin' Jay Hawkins had an opera background, which I didn't realize. And that's something he had. He did some opera singing, opera training. So, you know, again, that's something that
you learn something new every day.
And could not get a job doing opera.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and there's a lot of, I feel like there's probably a lot of other more acknowledged goth artists. I can't name any right now, but that had also that opera background, like, you know. I don't know.
I think Diamanda Galas had opera background.
Oh, she got it.
Yeah. Yeah, right?
And she also was. I did an interview with her decades ago, and she said that the first job that she had to do was playing piano because they wouldn't let her sing in, like, the various venues in New York. They didn't want her to sing. She actually got fired for singing.
Okay, so let me share this totally off subject, but it's about music. So Duane Eddy, Mr. Mm-hmm. Peter Gunn, in the 50s, I believe, was getting ready to play the Grand Ole Opry. And the people running it looked at his crew and said, well, he can't play on this stage. Mm. And he was Duane Eddy's saxophone player. They felt saxophone was the devil's instrument and therefore couldn't sully. So he had to cut his sax player or not play. And Duane Eddy, being cool, said, I'm out of here. He eventually played 20 years later when they relaxed their body a little bit, but
yeah, I mean, the Grand Ole Opry had a lot of very strict rules about what was and wasn't country.
Still,
yeah. So getting right back on topic.
Right back on topic.
I didn't realize that. Sorry, that Nat King Cole had a greatest country. Records?
Yeah, I forget which song it was, but
he had number one hit.
So
yeah. Yeah,
there were seven black people who had a number one country hit, and several of them were people who you wouldn't think would be involved, one being Nat King Cole. Ray Charles did do a very large country and western album. The Reverend Ike, the person who was famous for telling black people that they should get more money, was like a feature on another song. And then Darius Rucker, Charlie Pride had most of them. Kane Brown, a new guy, and Jimmy Allen. And that's it in the entire history of the charts. Although the charts themselves have also been really, oh, what's the word? Racist. Mm-hmm. That's the word.
Surprise.
Here's an example. And it's not – the R&B chart used to be called the race chart, mm-hmm. which is fun. And then for a while it was called the Hot Black Singles Chart, which for – I know – which is so bad in so many ways. But – so, Gorillaz had an album out in 2017 called Humans. Everybody who's singing lead is black, usually a rapper. Danny Brown's on it, Pusha T, Mavis Staples, Grace Jones. It was the number one rock record, which is awesome, except why now? Why would an album full of nothing but black singers and rappers be the number one rock record on the chart? Because Dave Manuel Barnes, a white dude. Ta-da, the end.
Are they still a cartoon band also?
Yes, they're also a cartoon band.
Part of their
band.
Shtick is that...
Their shtick is that they're all yeah. Jimmy Hewlett cartoons. And so rock is essentially very sonically progressive and racially conservative. So although it's wonderful that Mavis Staples has a number one rock record, it's just that she would probably never get one on her own. Size of album notwithstanding, because she's not, you know, considered a rock artist. She's been put any other place that you go if you're not, you know, a white person with progressive sounds. So,
yeah, and you also, well, I'm spoiling everything. You are going to open your talk with a bang. I mean, I just reading about Prince being a number one R&B artist.
Oh no, we can talk about it. So. If you walked out of this studio and went down to Amoeba Records and you said, I want to buy a copy of Purple Rain, you might think, oh, they're slick. It'll be in soundtracks. And unless something changed today, it's not. It also is not in the rock section because Prince, although Purple Rain's a rock album of rock songs and he's a rock star, it's in the soul category.
Shout out to
it's a lot of guitar.
shout out to the former Amoeba employee that I'm married to, who when we merged our records and I said, where does Ike and Tina Turner and disco go? He said, in rock with everything else. Why? So nice. I think maybe he got the message, even if they didn't. Sorry, Amoeba, we love you.
I love Amoeba, except for that. But it's not just them. And again, with the advent of tagging, you can put a song or a person in multiple categories online. But if you look up Prince on Spotify, he's next to a bunch of hardcore R&B artists. He'll show you a picture of Prince, and then here's the Gap Band. If you like Prince, you'll like Rick James. Well, that's true. But you may also like Steve Vai, and why is he not here? Mm-hmm. You might like Santana. Why is he not here? You may like The Who. Why are they not here? And so even the system of algorithms is making assumptions that are not necessarily based on tonality of music. It's sort of based on tonality of skin color. So
it's the power of classification, too, and people putting their biases on things when they're sorting things, and how people may not...
How things get tagged in, you know, someone initially mm-hmm. has to make that tag.
Mm-hmm. Yes. At Amoeba or at the library or, you know, at CalX in our library, how we have it organized. And then, but that is the beauty as well of social sharing and social and media and internet, is that we can then go in and put in our own ideas of what things are, add tags. I want to talk, I know we don't probably have too much more time, but a little bit about the instruments that you focus on, too, as being thought of as, say, like the banjo of American, maybe, instruments, or...
Oh, absolutely.
And how they have roots in African culture.
It's fantastic how so many instruments that we're used to, they've always been around. Well, they haven't always been around America. They may have been around other cultures, but we kind of just got them recently. So the banjo is very prominent in bluegrass and very prominent in country music. But it actually is based on the kora, which is big in Mali, other African areas. Same sort of five or six strings. The way the neck is, the way the body is, very similar. And when the slaves were here, they sort of modified it to what the banjo is now, because they were also playing in early folk music here. And now I haven't seen a black person play a banjo in so long. Not that they don't, black banjo players, but you know what I'm talking about.
Don't at him, black banjo player.
Yes, I love you. It's a rare to see that happen for no good reason other than they've been asked to not play it. Simple as that.
I've never heard a kora, but it looks beautiful. I probably have heard a kora,
I just don't know. You didn't know.
African,
Well, so everybody's assignment afterwards is to find some kora music, because it'll be great.
Yeah. I keep wanting to run into the library this entire conversation.
I'm looking at Ali Farkatura. I feel like he might.
I tip my tongue. I can't remember who the big kora player is, unfortunately. But I'm sure I'll get off the mic. Oh, that guy!
That guy.
Well, as Lisa mentioned, we're almost running out of time, and we're not quite. But I want to make sure and mention the particulars before we continue talking and then wrap up, because I could see us forgetting. So it is February 20th, which is next Wednesday. From 6:30 to 8 p.m.
Week from Wednesday, right?
Two weeks. Today's the 7th.
Yeah.
2 weeks. Yes, two weeks. Sorry, okay. 2 weeks from yesterday, 1 week from today. Oh, boy. February 20th. Just remember that, 2:20. 6:30 to 8 p.m. And is it sold out?
It's close. And I'm not just saying that to pump up ticket sales.
That's great, though.
Yeah, it is. No, it's selling out faster than I had imagined. So thanks to everybody who said, I want to see him talk about this. It's very fun. I know that the MOA themselves are impressed with ticket sales. So this is a great
thing. So you're going to be invited back, probably.
You hear that, Moad? He would like me to come back. I would love to come back.
What do you think? You'll put anything up online? Will you record? Will it be recorded? Or
I'm having it filmed.
Okay.
So if it comes out nice, mm-hmm. there will be a stream. Also, put together a playlist as well. So in terms of places to go, if you go to MOADSF, MOADSF.org, you can see on the calendar, you can get tickets and come. If you want to know more about that playlist I just mentioned, you can go to MMFRENCH.com. That's MMFrench.com. There's a mailing list right now which you can sign up for, but I promise I will post the playlist after the event.
I wanted to talk just briefly about the visual component of your talk, and just what you're drawing from and what you stumbled upon. Like, okay, that's definitely going into that's going to be projected.
Definitely some groovy metal. So one thing I will talk about is how heavy metal came from blues, and sometimes just by brute force, by going through chess records and going, I'll lift this, I'll lift this, I'll lift this. So you can juxtapose, let's say, Led Zeppelin playing a song and then juxtaposing the Willie Dixon original and going, they didn't change anything.
Yeah, one of my favorite podcasts is called Your Favorite Band Sucks, and the Led Zeppelin episode is basically that with a lot more swearing.
You really don't want to know about how your band works. They're all, a lot of them are just people with great skill in just one area, right?
Also, you think the Carter family are great. Why did the Carter family do that?
Yeah. It was a different time.
Yeah, kill your idols, guys. It's okay, we're going to change the name of Arts and Review to kill your idols.
In Review.
In Review. Or if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him. In Review.
That's our parenthetical.
In a higher voice. Sorry, you did mention the website, Moad SF.
Yes.
Okay, good.
In the course of going through all of this, were there things that surprised even you? I mean, were there things that when, like, colleagues sent you, said, here, you have to investigate this, you went, I can't believe this. I mean, what were some of the sit back in your chair and kind of have your jaw hang open moments?
I believe there were a couple of songs that were just really racist that black people were involved in writing. And sometimes the music was taken and then lyrics were grafted by another writer. And there's songs that we know now. I can't think of one on top of my head, but they were smoothed out by the time they got there. But in the middle part, it was like, wow, you stole a black person's song and then put filth on top of it. You stole it and then degraded it and then tried to resell it. It's like that's the amount of erasure there is just diabolical.
It's well, sort of like insulting you and then kicking you while you're down.
Yes.
And then spitting on your
Right. The thought process of, wow, that's great. You know what it needs? Racism. More racism.
A true story. My father-in-law was born in Merced and he didn't know who Little Richard was for years because they only played the Pat Boone versions of the songs on the radio till he got to a big town. He much preferred the real deal. So some of it, again, it's like you don't even know how much has been subtracted from your existence to hear about things. One thing to go, I don't want to listen to that music because those people I don't like listen to it, which is still kind of a high school thing. But people kind of take that with them into their adult world and sort of cut out their ability to appreciate other things without even knowing that it actually is from the same thing you like. Mm-hmm. I remember in high school there was the art kids and the stoners. And the stoners were all about, Blue Oyster Cult. And the art kids were about Kate Bush. And they would never play each other's music. They would just sort of say, well, I don't like them, therefore I don't like their music. And it's like, with Spotify now, with YouTube, you can. Mm-hmm. Right? You don't have to make these walls about what you don't like because there's not even anything keeping you from it. Not your friends, not money, not access.
Yeah. And in fact, when it's more accessible, sometimes it gets more attractive. There's a variety of mindsets there where you're like, when you're younger, I think if it's less accessible, it's more attractive. And then when you get older, it's like, I can get that so easily. Like, I remember the music I listened to when I was a kid, my older siblings making fun of me because it was so weird. And now it's everywhere. And now it's like, classic rock or, contemporary. And there's cruises. There's like new wave cruises, but because it's just... It's available.
It's sold for soda pop, and it's in Hot Topic. It's on the malls of America.
Yeah, it's kind of the saddest thing when people are exposed to certain things, like you said, when you're young or when you're from a certain place, but then you don't grow out of that and try to look beyond those borders and just keep listening to the same thing. But it also shows how we sometimes are exposed to a later version of something. And don't know that, 20 or 30 years before somebody else did the same thing before or inspired that. And it just shows you can just keep learning.
It's been repackaged. Blues repackaged as metal. Yeah. 90s R&B is being repackaged as K-pop.
That's just amazing.
That was a shock to me, actually.
Yeah.
Listening, Teddy Riley, who was king of New Jack Swing and Mr. Rump Shaker and No Diggity, found he could not get his music on the radio because there was too much melody. there was a bridge, because all the R&B labels are trying to compete with the stripped downness of hip hop right now. But K-pop actually brought him over to South Korea and said, "We love your music. We actually want it to be more musical because that's the style they sing over." So there's lots of melody, lots of bridges, and he and a bunch of other people are now pumping out K-pop and reselling that back to America because they can't get a foothold with it anymore here.
This world is just too strange for words sometimes.
It is. Welcome to 2019.
Hey! So more of these things to cheer you up will be at the show on February 20th at Mullet.
Is there stuff beyond this that I know you're focused very much on this particular presentation, but given that there's been sort of the response already to it, I mean, are there things that you're considering after February 20th?
Somebody literally yesterday told me, asked me, "So you're making a book of this, right?" I'm like, "I never actually thought of that, duh. So let me work on that one."
Or a documentary.
Yeah. Really? Yes.
Well, we'll have you back on Arts and Review for the book or
and film close-ups for the documentary.
Either way, you'll be talking to Greg again.
Either way.
Well, we should mention the specifics one more time.
All Your Favorite Music is Probably Black, presented by Mark Montgomery French at the Music of the African. I'm going to say it wrong again. Someone else say it.
Diaspora.
Thank you. At 685 Mission Street at 3rd, San Francisco. And you can get information at moadsf.org.
Mark Montgomery French, thank you so much for coming and talking with us today.
Thank you for having me on. It's been pleasurable.
So we were talking about Screamin' Jay Hawkins, and there's a version of Old Man River on this, which I haven't heard, and you said you hadn't heard either.
No idea.
So we're going to go out with a little bit of Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
We're going to have an adventure together.
Coming up in, depending on how long she lets it go, maybe 6 minutes, will be Pennyroyal to take you up until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm Gregory Sharpen.
I am Lisa Monhoff.
And I'm Stephanie Kalem.
And we will be back next week. Everybody out there, take care and have a good rest of your Thursday.